Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
On an entire weekend in LA, he sat around with a middle-aged man and watched film.
And SI's Pat Forty.
This is good. We got free market Wetzel fired up today.
Here's Pat and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. Big announcement.
Big
announcement. We welcome our newest member of the family, Ross Dellinger. He's been on the pod a couple times this spring. We've had some defectors, some traitors, dead to us.
That's right.
I don't even remember them.
Hey.
We bring in Ross. Welcome to the show. Huge upgrade over whoever the hell used to be on this show.
We're the realignment winners here. Let's face it.
Yeah. We got Texas, Oklahoma, USC, and UCLA all in one.
That's right.
We threw New England United out of here.
I'm glad to be on. I'm glad to be on. Excited about the opportunity in the experience.
All right. So. Ross works at Sports Illustrated. Very plugged in. Very excited to have him. Pod's going to be popping this fall. Starting right now. It's always popping. I mean, the hell?
Always. But yes, we're upping the dose on our information quotient right here, right now.
Yeah. New England United is gone, and the burning corpse of Jeremy Pruitt and an asparagus farm is gone. We don't even go watch your soccer. Go watch your soccer. This
That's
is a
right.
football. This is football time.
That little orange checkerboard guy.
This is America.
Yep.
All right. We're going to start right off with something that Ross reported just today. This is why we have you on here. This is federal legislation, possibly the big NIL push. That everybody wants the feds to come in and solve the problem. You spoke with college football's favorite senator, Tommy Tuberville, about a proposal that he and Joe Manchin, Tuberville's out of Alabama. He used to coach Auburn, of course, and many other schools. Joe Manchin is from West Virginia, his buddies with Nick Saban. They are going to try to come up with some NIL legislation, bipartisan. All of that, Tuberville described the NIL situation in college sports as a, quote, mess, unquote, and a, quote, free-for-all, end quote. Talk to my coaching buddies. They've never seen anything like it, Tuberville said. When you don't have guidelines and direction, no matter what you are doing, you are lost. They are all lost right now, end quote. As we know, Auburn has never had any pay-per-play allegations involving them. So I'm sure this is hurting the sensibilities of Coach Tuberville that this is going on. What is this proposal? I read your story and I saw lots of buzzwords and general lamenting, but I didn't really understand what they were proposing. But I'm not very political.
Not a lot of specific.
Yeah.
Not a lot of specifics, not a lot of concepts right now. They don't have any kind of real, or they at least didn't tell me they had any kind of real framework for a bill at all. It's in the infancy stage is how they describe it. They are sending out letters to all the commissioners and athletic directors in different conference offices, and I would guess the NCAA office as well, hoping for feedback from stakeholders in college sports. Let me preface all this by saying this has happened now for like 4 years, right? This is like the ninth bill. This would be the ninth, if it does happen, this would be the ninth NIL bill proposed or filed in Congress. None of them have advanced even to the first step that you would have in the legislative process, despite us having probably at least 8, maybe as many as 10 to 12 hearings on NIL. It is just not advanced at all. The fact that this one's coming from a first-time senator who isn't on really many powerful committees, isn't super connected, right, in politics. He's just a year and a half in the fact that they don't have any framework at all would tell you that this is there's a lot of red flags here on this thing having momentum to go the next level or the next step. So I'll just preface it with that. Don't get your hopes up on this thing going through.
What stopped the other 8 bills And I guess you probably already answered this question. Like, you know, why should we believe the 9 is going to be any different?
I don't think you should believe the 9th is going to be any different, probably. But if you did want to believe that, I think you might look, you know, the man who is drafting it. I mean, or the men who are drafting it. You know, they do have close college football connections. They probably are closer to college football, the sport, and the stakeholders in the sport than any other senators. I would say certainly Tuberville, that's the case. And Manchin, probably the case too. He probably is more knowledgeable about, these two are probably the most knowledgeable maybe in the Senate about college sports and the actual inner workings. So that's a positive. Any bill they create probably is going to be conservative leaning, though. Obviously, Tuberville is very conservative, and Manchin is the most conservative Democrat in the Senate. So it's going to be a conservative bill. And it's funny because about an hour right after we dropped that news, there was a more congressional news, and this one's from the Democratic side. And so you've got these two, right, the two parties, and they can't really come together. Both of these bills will probably be drastically different from one another. They need to be combined, and a compromise needs to be reached, which was close last summer. They were close to a compromise, Roger Wicker and Maria Cantwell and Richard Blumenthal on a bipartisan bill that could actually have a chance. And at the last minute, last June, right before the NIL deadline hit on July 1, it fell through, mostly because of, you know, with several different provisions, but mostly because of long-term student medical care is what kind of broke down last summer that. So don't get your hopes up for anything in the next few months. I'll say that.
I'd extend that to years. I think Cory Booker is part of this one that just came out, former Stanford player. So there's former players. I mean, no one doubts Kurt Tuberville, and man, these guys all know the game, and they have what they consider good intentions. I'm gonna literally lose it if all of a sudden this becomes like a Republican Democrat. Like, no,
of all no. things, right? I mean, this.
I come to college football so I don't have to listen to that nonsense. Like, yeah. Please do not do this. But I'm reading this letter. You know, we must preserve the time honored tradition of college sports, and we are rapidly accelerating down a path that leads away from the traditional values associated with scholastic athletic competition. Values? What?
Yeah. And look at these two things. And if you read the bill from Booker and them, the language is the exact opposite, basically.
Yeah.
You know, the Booker and stuff language is what used to be. I think they took it out, but it used to be like revenue sharing and collective bargaining stuff they're talking about. They're going in the whole other direction. You know, athlete freedoms to do whatever they want, and NIL transfer whenever you want, enter the draft and come back to college. There, it's totally open market completely. And then you have, right, the Tuberville letter and eventual maybe bill that will be like the opposite, probably will be completely conservative leaning, might even include antitrust protection from Congress, which of course the Democrats in the Booker bill will not include, and probably would never. I don't think they can ever get them to agree on that. And that's the biggest thing that college administrators want, right, is antitrust protection. That's why when you talk to college administrators about what needs to happen to get an NIL bill, a federal NIL bill, the first thing privately they'll tell you is we need Republicans to win back the Senate.
Right. Yeah, that's been talked about, bandied about quite a bit in college sports, as they think that that's the surest ticket to getting some sort of NIL thing passed. Although, even that, as you said, I mean, we're 0-8 right now. We'll see what it takes to get one actually anywhere down the line towards becoming a law.
I still just don't understand what they're looking for. Okay, so they talk about guardrails, or we can't let this become a recruiting item. And so they don't want it to be a recruiting inducement. There's no way it isn't a recruit. There's no way to have it not be a recruiting inducement.
Right.
Yeah. And I think the big thing they want is to, because right now, obviously, like, I think it's like 30 or 35 states have
different
their own NIL laws, and they vary a little bit.
Yeah.
But
it doesn't seem to be
they talk about it like it varies a lot.
Because that's the thing they can talk about, but they don't want to talk about what they really want, which is limiting the amount of money the player can get, which has been ruled unconstitutional.
Right.
Okay.
There's cutting out inducements, which you're going to have. I mean, even if you have a federal bill, you're going to have recruiting inducements. Like, it's going to have, collectives aren't going away. They're not going to disappear.
How would they? Like, right. How you say, okay, we don't have a collective. You create something else. If you know that if you go, and as this goes on, it'll be quite obvious. Nick Saban is like, hey, Bryce Young made $1 million last year. He's just sitting out there saying it. Well, is that a recruiting inducement? I mean, no and yes. He wants every quarterback in the country to know our quarterback makes $1 million a year here. And in a couple of years, that might be $5 million. So this is impossible. It's over on this. It has to be. It's the same way you know if you're a Major League Baseball player and you're going to go play for the Cleveland Guardians or the New York Yankees, you have a bigger shot of being a huge national star in New York.
Right.
You just do. You know, no one has to tell you. You're like, hey, this city seems bigger than the other city. I don't know. Like, there's no way to stop this stuff. I don't even know. They want to limit it, but they can't.
I mean, where they tried to draw the line to begin with was a very, you know, futile, erasable line of, well, you can't give them anything in order to sign. You can only get it once you get there and prove your worth, or that was the original intention. Okay, but how long was that original intention really ever going to stand up? This was always going to come down to being a recruiting inducement, wasn't it? I mean, that's the way it used to be under the table. It's going to be the same thing on top of the table. And you can try to set up a rule network that says, well, no, you have to wait until you get here and we see you've run a 4.4 and you've benched 450 and then we can start giving you money. I mean,
but you can't stop a business from saying that's the kid I want to.
Right.
You don't. There's no like, oh, now that you've run for 100 yards in a game, you are now, we now dictate to private industry that you are worthy of a sponsorship. You can't do that. Private industry could say John Ruiz is run. He's a one man collective at Miami, right? With Life Wallet. Like, how do you tell John Ruiz who he can and cannot say to hire?
Yep, you can't. And that's where the NCAA, you know, they spent, I think they're still down there somewhat conducting interviews, or at least I asked them a couple of weeks ago they were. And they're trying to, I think, gather all the information they can. But I don't know that they can do anything. And I think they know that. And that's a problem for them because how do you prove the big question, you know, how do you prove an inducement? Like, how can you prove that this is an inducement against NCAA rules when it's a business, you know, or businessman like John Ruiz offering what he says is endorsement deals? I mean, you know, everybody might say, oh, well, this is an obvious inducement, but can you really prove that? And also, as one person told me recently, like, an inducement actually shouldn't be illegal. And it was part of, you know, what the Supreme Court kind of ruled. You can't restrict athletes and athlete compensation. So the NCAA is caught, in college sports is caught in this, like, I keep saying it and writing it, but like this weird purgatory, right? Like in between amateurism and professionalism. And we're certainly not going back, right? We're not going back to amateurism. It's all forward. Any kind of federal legislation is probably going to be forward. And that's just how it's going to be.
Yeah. I mean, the how long it takes to come to grips with all of that, I don't know. But that is that's the tension here, is college sports has become more professionalized, but still doesn't want to become professional. How do you manage that?
How do you tell somebody they're not allowed to make a living when you won't sign them? You can if you employ them, but they won't. You can if you get them in a union and collectively bargain and they agree to it, but they won't do that. So how do you tell somebody they can't have a job? It's just like I said, you know, I use the story a lot, but there's like Baylor pays people influencers in high school that they deem to be influencers, social media influencers, to come to their school. They pay them directly. Come to our school, put yourself on Instagram and TikTok. You make our school cooler. We drag in new students. Great. Seems like a pretty good idea by Baylor. So these couple women are making some money off of Baylor. Terrific. How do you stop? Why would you stop that? Like, where's the harm? These two girls are really cool. So they're too cool. So they shouldn't get paid.
TCU doesn't have the influencers. That's why.
Get your own influencer.
Texas Tech doesn't have the influencers.
Where is the American value? I don't care whether what party were you sitting there saying, I don't want you making any money.
Well, and like Pat was saying, I think Pat's referring to an issue that we're seeing the NCAA transformation committee tackle right now. And it's for years, the NCAA in college athletics, and I don't want to say the NCAA because it's really college athletic leaders, ADs and commissioners and presidents of these schools. They've gotten together for years now and they've tried to legislate competitive equity. And you can't do that. They're realizing now it is a failure. We can't keep doing it. We can't handcuff the big schools. Because the small schools couldn't afford this, this, and this. And you're just seeing it all crumble, you know, and in competitive equity and all these cost containment things we're seeing start to be pulled off by the transformation committee. And it's just another step, you know, in that purgatory that we're in more toward the professional model.
What they can do, and I forget which coach, Narduzzi proposed it. They can agree every school in Division I or whatever league can agree that we will only spend, voluntarily agree, we will only spend $50 million on our football program.
Right.
And limit locker rooms and private planes for assistant coaches and recruiting and all the, and weight rooms and all that stuff. They can do that.
Yeah, that cap overall spending and do it, yes, as a conference or, possibly voluntarily. As a five,
I'm sure I can see the SEC teams agreeing to all that. Yeah, sure.
That's exactly.
All right.
Why don't you agree to it on your thing?
Hey, you want to see Vanderbilt and Mississippi State fall out of favor in the SEC really quick?
Yeah.
Wait, we can't spend more than that.
You want competitive balance? You can get this done in a phone call if you guys are that excited about it, because you can voluntarily say, "Well, we're only going to spend this much money." We wouldn't necessarily be capping how much a coach could be paid because we pay them all $50 million, you know, whatever. Anyway, all right, ESPN poll on this, and this is sort of my big thing because all you hear about are complaints from the coaches. You don't hear any complaints from the players. ESPN did a poll of 200 coaches and players. Pretty interesting. Some decent results. Here's the transfer portal, right? 70% of coaches and administrators polled thought the transfer portal was bad for the game.
Yeah, I wonder 31%
of players said the same.
Yeah,
opposite. Yeah,
we've been getting a lot of good guys, said Washington defensive back Alex Cook. I'm actually thankful the portal. A lot of guys are getting opportunities at other places, but they may not have gotten the opportunity the place they were at before. Okay, players said 70% NIL opportunities are a frequent topic in the locker room, though it isn't proving to be a divisive issue. Remember when the coaches said players get all upset because someone else is making a buck? Right, star players making more money than backup.
Oh yeah,
backup player.
Oh yeah.
How the heck could you have an organization like that? Because what I do know is every coach and AD is also paid the exact same amount as everyone in the athletic department.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah.
In every other business in America, everyone's paid equally, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. Sure.
That was always the worst argument. I mean, come on.
Here's Ohio State safety Ronnie Hickman. Seeing C.J. Stroud do that deal, or just seeing guys, you don't even have to be on my team for me to be happy to see you doing something with NIL. College football's been around a long time. Now we're legally finally able to benefit off our name image is huge. So when I see anyone doing something successful or just good for them and their families, I'm happy for it, and I'm encouraging.
Yeah, obviously, yes. The getting the player input was good. That was a good part of that poll because – the players are a lot less uptight about all this than the coaches and administrators are.
Going great for them.
Yeah. Yeah. Things are a lot better. This is good. We got free market Wetzel fired up today.
I am. Government regulation. What are we doing? This one was interesting in the player poll. How do we get players to stop opting out of bowl games? 80% of the players said providing NIL payments to the players who play in the bowl game.
Mm-hmm.
Bowl games, they're coming for your money. They want your blazer.
It's coming down the pipe. Yeah. I went to the bowl season last couple of years. I went to bowl season and I was on an NIL panel in front of all the bowl executives, lots of Blazers. And I told them, like, you guys better like come to grips with it. You're going to have to start paying NIL. You're going to start paying players to come to your bowl. And a lot of them were, no, it's not going to be worth it. It's not going to be worth the TV viewers to pay so-and-so quarterback. And maybe it's not. They're just not going to play in the game.
Don't need it. People will gamble on it anyway. They'll get a couple million people to watch. They're probably right. Yep. They don't need it. But that would do it. Players are like, yeah, they're over the traditional values of the bowl game.
Right.
Or, hey, you get a, you know, I don't know, whatever they give you.
You get an Xbox
swag bag.
Gift. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The bad duffel bag. Yeah. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
They were paying an NIL.
They were. I mean, you know.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, they had a shop. Remember they had shopping sprees, like $250, $500 shopping sprees. Remember that Arkansas player stole something one time? Yeah. He went like over the limit. They got like $300.
That was the Belk Bowl. They all got to go to Belk.
Yeah, the Belk. Yes, he stole it from Belk. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yes, amazing.
He double dipped on his free Belk excursion.
That's right. Awesome. We're going to look back years and years and be like, what were we doing? Wow.
Yeah, that was what passed for scandal, stealing from Belk.
Yeah, free tattoos.
Don't forget, at the Rose Bowl, they would always have the prime rib challenge at Lawry's, right? Oh,
yeah.
Right?
Lawry's Beef Bowl, yeah.
Yeah, eat the beef. Get as much beef as you can get, but you're promoting Lawry's. NIL was fine then. I don't know what the record was on that.
Yeah,
got a 16-ounce cut of prime rib, followed by a 12-ounce second helping.
And that was it? They couldn't go thirds?
The individual marks. No, you could keep going.
Okay.
Purdue in 2001 ate a combined 734 pounds of prime rib.
You know why? Those dudes knew they were never getting back. They got one shot at the Rose Bowl, one shot at the Beef Bowl. We ain't coming back next year. Drew Brees is out. We're done.
They were starving after pushing that big drum around. In 1978, Michigan offensive lineman Ed Maransky ate 8 pounds of prime rib.
Oh, my God.
To set the beef
in a single
record.
Sitting?
How long was his colon
Could
tied up?
Can you imagine
up?
The bathroom habits no. the next few days?
That's it. How long was the colon God. Tied up? Good God.
Oh, my God.
This story I'm reading here, Stanford was in it. Cardinal offensive lineman Josh Garnett went for the record. He tried for it. He ate 10 cuts of prime rib, estimated 7 pounds. And then had to tap out.
He couldn't.
According
quite
to
match Ed Maransky.
He couldn't. The God. Maransky. There were a lot of noises a normal man shouldn't hear or make. Teammate Kevin Dancer said. Joshua was in a lot of pain. Garnett said practice the next day was not good.
Shocking.
You're lugging around 7 pounds of
the burgers are great. I remember the wing, you know, the wing. Yeah, I feel like I covered multiple. I guess it was Buffalo Wild Wing Citrus Bowl.
Oh yeah.
So they had the wing competition, wing eating competition, which was just gross. I mean, it was just 5 dozen wings. It's like I have a trouble with a dozen. Brutal.
Ed Maransky, small sample Heisman.
I was going to say, that dude needs to be memorialized on the pod forever.
Yeah. I mean, that is, he won a Super Bowl with the Raiders later on in his career, but nothing better than owning the Beef Bowl record dating back to 78. Man, those old Bo Schembechler teams are just tough.
That's right. That's
yeah.
They don't make teams like that anymore. one more from the poll. This was also players. So this is where you're going to run into this problem with the government. I don't know. The poll was a little, they could have given us the full results so some of us could dig deep into this. Come on, ESPN, step it up. But according to the players' respondents, 46% of the players said they have about the right amount of power today, while another 21% say they still don't have enough. So the player empowerment movement is sitting at 77% saying good or we can do better.
Okay.
54% of players said their schools would begin paying athletes directly in the next 5 years. 28% said it would happen in 10 years. I think like Ross's point, this train is going one direction.
Yep.
I'm not sure how you stop that.
Nope.
Mm-mm.
Guardrails, Dan. You can guardrail it, but you can't stop the train.
Yeah. Yeah, and the federal government, good luck getting Democrats to agree on restricting, you know, 19, 20, 21-year-old athletes, right? In predominantly, at least in football, right? 70% are black.
Yeah.
You know, good luck that happening. That has been said to me up here on the Hill quite a bit is that Democrats are not going to be on board with some of those things.
Right? Yeah. I did not know stopping pay to people is a partisan issue. Yeah. Some of your constituents are now making lots of money. We must stop this because our head football coach is uncomfortable.
Yeah.
This is where we're at, man.
Our head football coach is making four to 10 million. Is uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That guy in the bowl suit is, you know, he was making tons of money off you now. anyway, I don't know. All right. Couple items here. You remember we had the big, the dust up over, Jordan Addison transferring from Pitt.
Yeah.
And, Pat Narduzzi among others. Deuce is getting on here a lot lately.
Oh, he's been chirping.
Yep. Claimed, USC was tampering. Lincoln Riley has responded. The ongoing saga here, the Lincoln Riley, Pat Narduzzi dust up. This is Lincoln. When someone challenges you with no facts and only emotion, do you take it personally? Absolutely, you do. I understand it's an emotional time. It's an emotional game with lots of emotional people. We recruited Jordan just like we did every other transfer. Jordan got in the transfer portal. Jordan came out on a visit to USC despite all the negative things that were put out magically by somebody. He's a kid that's all about ball.
There we go.
NIL had nothing
all
to do with
ball.
Yeah, that's right. NIL and catching passes from Caleb Williams had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, nothing to do with it. Well, maybe he did. I just said, maybe he just liked it out there. Intriguingly, I mean, he lost his receivers coach and his offensive coordinator who didn't like to run the ball. Narduzzi was mad they didn't run enough. I don't think that bothered Jordan Addison.
No, he probably didn't like the idea that without Mark Whipple, we might not throw it as much.
Yeah, Narduzzi, he really has, man. He's been on fire. I ran into him at ACC Media Days, and I think it was right the morning before or morning after the Whipple comment. His comments on Whipple came out. And I'm like, dude, you're supposed to make news here at Media Days, not a day before. And he acted like, you know, oh, I didn't make any news. And I said, you ought to see Twitter, your podcast. And he went on. It was some podcast with like an automobile dealer in town that he went on with. I'm like, what Bazzi. Are you doing? What is this? You
know? Bazzi does he interviews everyone down there in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Probably getting paid to be on that podcast, too.
Big booster from what I could hear.
He introduced him as one of the greatest college football coaches of all time.
Well, I listened. Here we go.
It's not the hard hitting truth that you get over here at the College Football Inquirer. Mm-hmm. But hey, what it is. I do have one problem with Jordan Addison, and it is this. Lincoln Riley said on his visit, all he wanted to do his entire visit was talk ball. We literally then missed several of the meals and entertainment we had scheduled just so we could watch more film and talk more ball. That's all he's about. Now, Jordan, you know, you be you, but I would think getting an official visit as a USC, coveted USC football recruit would be one of the greatest experiences in the history of humankind.
It's something you shoot for. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know what.
And you, LA. You sat around with this undisclosed entertainment, let alone the meals. On an entire weekend in LA, you sat around with a middle-aged man and watched film. Come on.
He's all ball.
All ball.
He's all ball, Dan.
Do it for the rest of us.
I know a lot of, I don't know about football, but a lot of USC sports, one of the things you do on an official visit, go to the beach and learn how to surf. He turned down, the guy might have turned down a surfing lesson to watch ball with Lincoln Riley.
Learn to surf. All right.
Yeah.
If he got to go to Lincoln Riley's house, that would be cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what they did. But whatever it did, it worked. So they got him. So we have that. Texas coach Steve Sarkisian weighed in this week on the QB battle that is brewing between Hudson Card and Quinn Ewers. Card was there the last year, kind of 2 years, but got benched. Did not play a ton last year, but he is probably a better runner than Quinn. Quinn is the superstar. Sarkisian said, "I'm excited for both guys." He was asked what his timeline to naming a starting quarterback would be. And he said, "I think I have an idea in my head, but I'm not going to tell you guys," meaning the media. I predict that the timeline was like 6 months ago. And yeah. Quinn Ewers will be the starter. Am I right or wrong?
No, I think you're probably right. Sark said at Big 12 Media Days it would not last as long as last year's decision between Card and Casey Thompson, which then, of course, he reversed and ended up with more Casey Thompson than Hudson Card. And I think you're correct that that is because Quinn Ewers was like the number one quarterback in his class and probably abundantly more talented. Now, we'll see what he delivers on the field, see if he lives up to the mullet and the automobile dealership deal that he got from Ohio State for handing off twice or whatever it was. So a lot of expectations for Quinn Ewers.
Yeah, what was it?
Speaking of NIL, he's like NIL. I think he got more NIL from anyone who's never taken a snap than anybody in the country, right?
Two snaps.
Already
two snaps.
Traded teams. Yeah, two snaps. Two
he handed
snaps.
Off yeah. twice, right?
Two snaps and $2 million. $1 million a snap.
He absolutely ripped Ohio off. Just walked in, stole the money, went back to Texas. Kind of applaud it. anyway, we'll see. I expect that to be Quinn Ewers. Especially with Arch coming. I mean, you got to give him the year. Let's go.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Most people are surmising that Quinn will have 2 years, then leave, and Arch will come in and redshirt. I just can't imagine Arch redshirting, but, you know, maybe he will. It's hard to see that happen.
Have a hard time seeing anybody redshirt anymore.
Eli didn't play as a freshman, barely played.
Yeah.
At Ole Miss. And Peyton was too good. He got going kind of middle of the season, but.
Yeah,
we do think the Mannings will be patient, but we'll see. That's going to be very, very interesting. Obviously, they got to get something going because Alabama's coming on week 2. All right, now here's a big story: South Carolina.
Oh,
South Carolina Gamecocks. Gamecock is a fighting chicken, an angry bird, not a nervous bird, an angry bird.
That's right.
In a story, I had to double check to make sure this is legit because
it's a really South Carolina story. Really South Carolina.
The Post and Courier, David Cloninger, I believe I'm saying your name right, David. Probably not, actually, because I say all the names wrong and I can't. The most famous person in the state of South Carolina, I have to call William Christopher Sweeney because I can't say his name. So don't be insulted. Tremendous reporting here. Tremendous. Pulitzer Committee, save some space, okay? Now, South Carolina has a beloved mascot, Sir Big Spur. Sir Big Spur is a fighting chicken. I don't know. I don't know that much about chickens other than how to eat it. I don't quite understand all this. But they got this bird. In 1999, these two South Carolina fans, Mary Snelling and her husband, Ron Arbertelli, they threw their pet chicken out on the top of
a baseball dugout.
Dugout, strutted around. Everyone got excited. So for the last 22 years or so, they've gotten Big Spur, Sir Big Spur, ones all the way to six, I believe. There's been some, you know, chicken soup along the way. to kind of excite the fans. Now, in a bizarre sense, this is a private mascot. South Carolina does not control their mascot. Sir Big Sir is not under the control of USC. Imagine Bevo just wanting
LSU Tiger just wandering around being shows privately up with, owned in Baton Rouge.
Someone just shows up with Mike the Tiger every week.
Yeah.
Bevo. Yes. Hey, are you bringing Bevo this week? Yeah, I'll bring Bevo.
Ralphie. Yeah. Can we get South Ralphie Carolina in off the planes or not?
No. Ralphie. Look out. Uh-oh, look out. He's bringing Ralphie. USC, you have to control your... This is why you never win. Get your crap together. You got to own your mascot. This would never happen elsewhere. Anyway, Big Sir, Sir Big Spur is very popular, but the Mary and her husband there are getting old, so they want to retire from the duties. So they met this other couple, Beth and Van Clark, and they were going to take over bringing a Gamecock to all the games. And at first, they were all friends.
A likely story, the way a great story always starts. At first, they were all friends.
Here's Van talking about Snelling and lovely people. Lovely people.
Mm-hmm.
So they stepped in. They brought they're now in charge of this the new Big Spur. But they don't control the name Sir Big Spur, so they're going to have to name it something else. But here's the issue, okay? The Snellings, they got two names. She's going, Mary Snelling's thing is that you have to cut off the comb, okay? Every rooster has got what they call the comb. It's the bright red thing on the top of the rooster's head, right?
Yeah. If you think of like Foghorn Leghorn.
Like a rubber or glove.
That little thing.
Yeah.
So apparently the comb... they cut the comb off because in a fighting rooster, you don't want that because if you're fighting, the other roosters are fighting, it's something to like peck at and bleed. So you try to cut it off. And so you're a little more warred up. However, it's a little inhumane because the comb, as they call it, actually allows the blood to flow up and cool. It cools the rooster's blood on a hot day, as is the Post and Courier notes in a wonderful bit of trivia that I did not know. Chickens cannot sweat. Chickens cannot sweat. So
that's why this deep dive is an award-worthy article. We're learning stuff. We're learning.
Literally one of the most absurd stories. So the Clarks are more humane. They want to keep the comb because they're like, hey, it's hot. It's the SEC. And these bird is going to overheat and suffer if it doesn't have the comb to cool the blood. And Mary is taking the hardline approach that's not a fighting gamecock. And this is a bunch of BS. You got to cut the thing off, even if the bird suffers. And so now there is a massive dispute and they're not letting the name Sir Big Spur go along. And, there's a fight over what this thing should look like, and now the two sides around this thing are at war with each other. And South Carolina is stuck because they don't control their own mascot. So, I will start with you, Pat. Who's right and who's wrong here?
Well, all right. For starters, South Carolina is just wrong because they're stupid because they have a chicken for a mascot. So this is what you get when you decide our mascot, which we're going to put like a $9 million statue out front because we have a chicken. Like, what are you doing with a chicken? Okay, you and Coastal Carolina both. Go rethink your priorities. So if you're even going to have a chicken.
Well, that was one of the great parts of the story. They put the statue out. And they didn't give it not the claws.
The spur.
Talons or spurs.
The fighting spur.
And all the fans got mad. It doesn't have spurs. You got to add the spurs onto the statue. It's like the most ridiculous SEC football story ever.
It is. Yeah. They had to redo their multi-million dollar statue to make it more lifelike so that we can go back to the cockfighting days. That's what we're trying to replicate here in honor. We got cockfighting, a very proud chapter in American history for sure.
I don't think it's history, buddy. I don't think it's history.
No, I'm sure it's not in some parts of South Carolina and Kentucky. Anyway, I think it's okay to have a chicken that doesn't look like a literal, like, fighting rooster on your sideline. I really do. I am siding with the new Sir Big Spur owners in this and saying, go ahead, let the damn rooster have its comb and not die of heat stroke on the sideline in one of the hottest stadiums in America if you've been there for an early season game.
I can't believe PETA hasn't weighed in on this thing. Seriously. I mean, because chopping off the...
They don't even like the footballs made of pigskin. I mean, what a... whatever.
I agree with Pat. I agree with the new owners. I mean, it doesn't have to... Aren't we just taking it a little too literally? Like, it doesn't have to look exactly like... and most people probably don't even know that, right? Know that a real, like, a cockfighting chicken or whatever it's going to have the glove or doesn't have the glove thing or whatever. Like, really, like, we don't have to take it too literally. So leave the thing on there. Yeah. Let him strut around.
Let him show off his comb. Come on.
Chickens can't sweat. It just means more. You're telling me we got to take it literally. Of course we're going to take it literally. This is from the Mary's husband. One of the great quotes in SEC history. Quote, a chicken is a chicken, but a fighting gamecock is something different. This is the dumbing down of the Gamecocks. Whenever a new coach goes to a school that's been struggling, you always hear a statement similar to, quote, you've got to change the culture, end quote. I don't know what culture in our day and age means, but if it means making a Gamecock look like a chicken or not hurting him because it might make the chicken feel good, it's not preserving what we've built. This is dumbing down our culture.
Oh my God.
A grown man said that to a newspaper.
Saying that preserving the, hey, we just read the stuff on the Tuberville letter, preserving the traditions of college football. There you go. A freaking bird with a glove on its head. There you go.
According to Mary, this quote, this is how fired up these people are. Sir Big Spur is going to look like Barney the Barnyard Rooster. What do we got to bring Barney into it? Barney never hurt anybody.
I know, taking strays. Barney.
Here's the tradition they're upholding down there. 7-6, 2-8, 4-8, 7-6, 9-4, 6-7, 3-9. Yeah.
When that's your thing, you got time to argue over a chicken.
Yeah.
Big Sir Spur.
Priorities.
The real issue is they need to go up to Charlotte to that animal shelter and get Cluck Norris. Remember, Norris was this angry rooster that was attacking dogs and stuff at the kennel. He would fight anybody.
Yeah. We've said that. That's Cluck Norris is an absolute pod hero, and that's who they need to get. If they want to change the culture in a right way, go get Cluck Norris.
Get Cluck. Sir Big Spur is done. There's no more.
He's out.
They might. There's a rumor.
Cluck Norris is in.
Rumor they will call it the Spur.
Mm. Okay. But, then Ohio State come after him for using the?
It's T-H-E-E.
Oh, okay.
Gosh. So that's the.
We're going old English. Going back to the colonial days in South Carolina. Excellent.
So we do not know how Shane Beamer has not weighed in on this, but we're going to need.
Good job, Shane. I would find myself way too busy if I were Shane to weigh in on this.
Yeah, this is a classic. This is a classic. I say clip that little glove thing off. You're a little hot. Build him an air-conditioned chicken coop Georgia.
Ugga's doghouse, yeah.
Like the dogs have. There you go, yeah.
There's got to be a way around this. You won't want you.
I'm devastated that chickens don't sweat because that's one of my favorite episodes in Seinfeld is Little Jerry Seinfeld, the chicken, the fighting rooster they're taming. I don't know if either of you have seen it. And Kramer is putting the chicken into jacuzzi bags to get it ready and loosed up for the fight. And it starts, which Kramer claims it's sweating. It's profusely sweating. So
it's a lie.
It's a lie.
It's a lie.
Wow. Unbelievable. Science. Seinfeld not based in science. I'm upset.
It's Hollywood values. Shocking. We're talking about fighting roosters down here.
Next, you're going to tell me the ketchup bottle on their table at the diner doesn't really have ketchup in it.
I will give you this, okay? And this is a little Law and Order kind of story. A guy was flying into Australia, into Darwin, Australia, last week. This is according to TMZ. He's flying from Bali. And he's going through customs. A biosecurity dog, an Australian biosecurity detector dog named Zinta. Zinta the dog sniffed out his luggage and discovered that this guy was bringing two undeclared, did not mention it at customs, egg McMuffins, egg and beef sausage McMuffins.
Oh, that's big. Oh, my.
Two undeclared egg and beef sausage McMuffins was in his luggage stashed away. The Aussies were, as TMZ puts it, the not so happy meal. The Aussies said they were protecting. You can't bring beef sausage into the country. To protect from an outbreak of foot and mouth disease. So they have they confiscated the undeclared egg and beef sausage McMuffins and fined the passenger the equivalent of $1,874.
Damn.
Making this the most expensive two McMuffins ever.
Yeah. The value meal went up in cost there. Jesus.
I want the first off, you know, the two guys at the security ate the egg McMuffin, right?
Guaranteed. Although, here's my whole thought. That's like a 12-hour flight. What kind of shape is that McMuffin in when you're getting it out of your suitcase after 12 hours?
I'm kind of with you on that. Like, seems like a lot of effort for a McMuffin.
Yeah.
What does your suitcase smell like?
On your flight.
Yeah, exactly. You've got to eat it on the flight. What does your suitcase smell like? What do your clothes smell like? And then how edible is that thing when you get there?
And McMuffin has a distinctive smell. All your clothes smell like McMuffin or McDonald's kitchen, which is wonderful. I guess in a way, some people probably would like that.
I mean, I certainly applaud his commitment to the Golden Arches, but that seems silly. You know, you can get it at Australia. They have McDonald's in Australia, right?
I'm sure they do.
I don't understand. Also in there was a ham croissant.
Dude's a big time meat smuggler.
Loaded, yeah. Huh?
All in his luggage.
Did he have clothes in there? Or just
I don't know. But right. Zinta poked it out. So
good job, Zinta. Keep Australia safe.
Yeah.
That's this week in ridiculous fast food news. All right. What do we want to do as the last story here?
And what are our options?
Well, we've got the kangaroo, saga of the kangaroo. We've got this guy starting a fire because he tried to kill a spider. Yeah. And I got a drunk woman on the... I have a drunk woman in Florida.
Okay. Is the guy that lit the wildfire with the spider, is that a good one? I mean, I didn't read the story. I have to admit, I just saw it.
All right. Two more Law and Order. There's a lot. People are acting up. The summer is just...
Yeah.
It's tighten things up out there, people, okay? Make fun of the Australians. But I got a backload of people sending me crazy crime stories here. Let's go with this one here. Corey Allen Martin of Draper, Utah. A wildfire near Springville, Utah is now 90% contained, fortunately, according to firefighters. Police say it was started by a man who claimed he was trying to kill a spider. Corey Allen Martin was arrested. What happened was he told the cops that he saw a spider in a bush and decided to try to light it on fire to kill it. Tried to burn it with a lighter, according to the police booking affidavit. When he attempted to burn the spider, the surrounding bush ignited and fire began to spread very rapidly.
Genius.
You might be surprised to know he was also arrested for possession of drugs and drug paraphernalia.
I was about to say, how high was it? Yeah. Yeah. That's what my first thought was. How high or drunk was he? Well, the good thing is, I guess the spider's dead, right? The bush went up, the fire went up, the spider went up with it.
Spider probably did perish.
Presumably, yeah.
Yeah, but a whole bunch of them did.
If the drugs were hallucinogens, was the spider even real to begin with?
Oh, wait, who knows? That's a good point.
You know, did he?
I mean, come on. Why would you burn a spider?
I don't know.
Did the whole block go up too?
It was like a mountain fire.
Yeah. Nice wild fire.
Mountainside. Yeah. The whole mountain went up. Yeah. They had to bring in planes and stuff. Like, this is a big thing.
That dude.
60 acres.
Yeah. You know what? That dude needs to go to jail for a while. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He's got, that's some serious problems.
I mean, there's a lot of ways to kill a spider. Like lighting one on fire would not come readily to mind for me.
Seems like one of the last resorts.
I would think so.
And then finally on this, a woman with an open bottle of Jack Daniel's whiskey in a bag was arrested for driving a golf cart down Interstate 95 in Florida while drunk.
Oh, boy.
A lot going on here.
She got on I-95 in a golf cart to begin with. Like, even if she was sober, getting on I-95 in a golf cart.
They say Florida man, Florida woman.
And just to say here, a 58-year-old woman was arrested Saturday night. You'd think she was over on the side of the road driving her golf cart on Interstate 95? No. A semi-truck driver spotted the woman driving the golf cart in the center lane.
Oh, God.
God.
Oh my God!
With an open bottle of beer
on a Florida roadway. Yeah,
but she was concealing. Wow. She was concealing the bottle of Jack Daniel's, bag. So yeah. No one would notice.
She got the bag.
But you were driving a golf cart in the middle lane.
Yeah.
Wow.
The truck 58 driver. 58
years old, too, huh?
58. This woman, she's ready to party, man. She's got some miles on her, man.
Yeah, she does.
Jack Daniel's.
So does the golf cart, apparently.
Yeah. Go Gators.
Cocaine. I don't know. Where on 95 was she?
Where on 95?
She was in the Space Coast. That's kind of open. Could be UCF, too. Gus Bus.
Yeah. Could Florida be the Knowles.
Could have been anybody.
Could be the Knowles. You never know.
58-year-old woman. Okay. Semi-truck driver spotted the woman driving the golf cart in the center lane. The truck driver used her semi, so that's to steer the golf cart to the shoulder of the interstate. This woman's a real hero.
Good work.
The truck driver.
Yeah.
Once on the shoulder, the truck driver got out, grabbed the keys of the golf cart because the woman tried to drive away. When the troopers arrived, the woman started arguing with them. Oh, of course. And that's when they discovered the open bottle of Jack Daniel's Tennessee Fire whiskey.
Oh, I apologize to Jim Beam. It was Jack Daniel's. My bad.
Yeah. No, it was a bottle of Jack Fire whiskey. The season's got to get here, man. People are just losing their. They got nothing to do.
Yeah.
Nothing to do. This woman's driving golf carts around. The guy's lighting spiders on fire. People are arguing over chicken to rooster. Lost their damn mind.
My theory here is that, she's driving the golf cart because she's already lost her driver's license and any car she may have ever had, okay? Probably not her first drunk driving episode. I'm going to go.
Probably missed a payment or two on the car, too. And they love repoing quick now because they can sell those things for more.
Sure.
Like profit. Yeah. So, pay your car ticket and stay off the highway. Yeah, I don't know, man. We get here, Caesar.
Yeah, square's the kickoff. Come on, kickoff.
We're glad you're still going to stick with the show, Ross, after this.
I guess so.
You thought you were going to just come on and talk NIL bills. And this is what we get.
Chickens and golf carts on the interstate and lighting fires, spiders on fire. I mean, hey.
If she was riding in the breakdown lane, I mean, that's better than, but out in the middle, she's just going to get smashed.
Well, how'd she not? But yeah, I think Ross's first show. I think we spent more time talking about chickens than anything else.
Well, I mean, it's an important topic. What do you want me to do? Yeah. Nick Saban said last year was a rebuilding year. You want to go through that? mean,
oh no,
he did say that. I saw that.
Let's go back to the Spiders.
Win the SEC, go 13-2, and win the Heisman. Like, yeah. Thanks, Nick.
Yeah.
Do better. So,
there's that. Ohio State is favored in every game this year by double digits.
Right. So is Alabama too, I think?
So is Alabama too, I think.
Double digits every game?
Just those two, yeah.
And everybody, let's see, the other teams that are favored in every game were like Oklahoma, Georgia, Utah, and Air Force.
Yeah, we'll get to how many teams we'll do that maybe next time. How many teams could legitimately win. But yeah, so that's what we're dealing with. Let's get here. Appreciate everyone listening. Leave us nice reviews and subscribe. And Ross, what's your Twitter handle? Everyone should follow Ross now.
Just my name, Ross Dellinger.
There you go. And come back next week. We will talk to you later.